The views and opinions expressed by the guests on the following program do not necessarily represent those of Mark Radio, The Shepherd, or its advertisers.
From the studios of the Shepherd Radio Network, it's Afternoons with Mike, brought to you by Palm Beach Atlantic University, Orlando. This next hour is all about our walk with Jesus, with local pastors, newsmakers, people who are making a difference for the gospel. Now, here is your host, Mike Gilland.
Hey friends, and welcome to the program Afternoons with Mike, heard each and every day at this time. So glad that you are along with us. Have here in the studio somebody I just met, and it's a real pleasure to meet a banjo-picking, bass-playing lover of Jesus. How about that?
Thank you, Mike. Good to be here.
Grant Malloy is my guest today. Grant is the Seminole County Clerk of the Circuit Court and Comptroller. Now, that is a big title because the clerk's office, as we're going to hear later on in this program, it's a very busy office, isn't it?
It is, Mike, and I would say it's the most important office in local government, and I can go into details on that.
But yeah.
People don't realize how much work and value and importance the clerk's office is in county and even state government.
You know, I've found that in the times that I've made moves to different areas, and you find that to do something, you've got to go to the clerk's office to do it. So, I mean, you know, whether then as a pastor, obviously marriage licenses and things like that, you're pointing them to the clerk's office, and just so many things. I mean, it really is a kind of like a one-stop shop for so many functions in county government.
It really is. There is a estimate that there's over 1,000 different statutory responsibilities that the clerk's office has. And after being there for 5 years now, I can definitely say there's probably more than 1,000 when you really dig down into it.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I'm looking forward to hearing more about that again later on. First, you're a native to this area, right?
Well, I grew up in Seminole County since kindergarten. My family moved up from North Miami. My dad worked for NCR, so we traveled around the country. I was originally born in Texas, and most of my mom's family is still out there. But grew up in Florida. I remember when, you know, 436 was two lanes going through Apopka. I remember those days. So I've seen a lot of changes.
Yeah, you have. And you watched the whole Disney thing unfold and all of that.
Right. My dad opened a small business here. He was always proud to say he opened up before Disney.
Is that right?
Right.
Yeah, that's something. It's really fun to get to talk to people who were here prior to that. And I moved here in the mid-80s. From Indiana, but I visited here in 1973, which would be right after.
Right.
And we went to the park like in their first year when they were opened up, and wow, what you talk about some changes. I mean, back in that day, you had to get the little coupon books.
That's right.
You had to have an A ride, B ride, or C ride, or whatever. And
The A rides were totally worthless, right? You had to have that E ticket to get on Space Mountain.
That's it, and that's what everybody wanted. And I don't know what it cost, but I think it was somewhere around, what, $8, $10, $12, something like that.
I remember they had booths in Disney where you could go up and buy extra tickets.
That's right.
Because you needed a ticket for each ride.
Yeah, that's right. It's such a fun thing to think back on. But now people who have been going to Disney World most of their life, the kids that grew up since the 80s, they wouldn't know anything about all that.
No. And I don't know, did you ever go to Six Gun Territory?
No, I didn't.
Oh, that was up in Ocala.
Yeah.
Western shootouts in the streets.
I've heard about it.
Yeah. It's totally politically incorrect now, right? They had can-can girls and shootouts and cowboys. And that was, to me, as a young, you know, grade school kid, was like, wow.
So you know Florida before it became what it is today. And you've seen a lot of that stuff. And I remember hearing about this, that when we first moved here, one of the big attractions would have been the Bach Tower.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's what people came for.
Orange trees everywhere.
Oh, my goodness.
I remember at night where we live out towards Oviedo, when the citrus trees were blooming and that smell would hit you at night, it would almost make you sick after a while. It was so intense. All the, you know, hundreds of acres of orange trees around here, and they would get blooming. And with such sweet smell, like a gardenia.
Yeah.
And now you smell it and you're like, wow, that brings back memories. It smells so good.
It really is amazing to see the changes. And of course, anyone who drove down from 75 on the turnpike would see all of those just groves and acres upon acres of trees, and then the freezes in the late 80s and early 90s kind of just did a lot of that in.
You know, one of the best things about being in a local office and when you're campaigning, you run across so many different stories. There was one story where I was talking to Mr. Wheeler out in Oviedo. He's long since passed, and this goes years ago. And he was talking about how, I think it was his grandfather, was an Orange County commissioner back when Seminole County was part of Orange County. And he talked about his dad, or I think it's either his dad or granddad, but the point was he was a county Orange County commissioner from Oviedo. And to go to the commission meetings, he would ride a horse down to Orlando. And it took so long to get there that he'd stay in a hotel overnight before he took the trip back if the meeting went long.
From Oviedo down to Orlando.
From Oviedo to Orlando the Orange County Commission meeting. And you hear stories like that, and then you think, boy, you know, we get upset. We can't get there in 30 minutes, and you know, the traffic's backed up, but things have definitely changed a lot. About taking a horse to Orlando.
Yeah, well, you know, speaking of that, one of my favorite stories of when I first moved to Orlando in the mid-80s, and I have no idea what this police officer was doing or what he hoped to accomplish, but it was one of my first trips on the 408 back in the day. Mm-hmm. We got on the 408, and I was traveling to the east, and I came up to one of the little, they didn't have a Sun Pass back then or anything at all like that. So I come up to the toll and getting my change out. And I noticed just the far side of that little toll building that was right there. I thought, I wonder if a policeman ever sits back there to maybe, that thought hit my mind.
Right.
And so I'm thinking there might be a police car tucked behind there just ready to zoom out and get somebody that didn't pay the toll or whatever. And so I paid my toll, and the lady was real nice and said goodbye. And I start my car back up. And as I'm getting to the edge of that building, I glanced over there, and sitting there, sure enough, there was a policeman there.
I remember that. Yeah, you didn't throw your quarter in. So you got in trouble.
Yeah, he was on a horse.
Oh, really?
So suddenly now this starts off this whole thing of like, what is going to happen? If he did see somebody, is he going to be galloping after the car on a horse? And then I thought, is there going to be a light that he puts up on the horse's head like a siren? Is that going to happen? Yeah, all of these crazy things. Is he going to lasso the car? That was another thought that hit my mind. But that was one of the funniest things that I think I've ever seen. He was crouched down like I'm ready to zoom out on this trigger here. You know, that's what it was like. Oh, it's crazy. But it's really fun to think back to how things change in an area like Orlando has changed in major ways. Now, you mentioned that you grew up in South Florida before moving up here. So were your mom and dad, were they part of a church, or how did you get
to? You know, I was active when I was a little kid. They would go to an Episcopal church, and that's where I remember my pre-K and K classes. But once we moved up here, they kind of dropped out of it. So I did not grow up in a church background.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't until I got married and started attending church and eventually gave my heart to the Lord over at Fairview Shores Baptist Church, which is no longer there. And, it brings, you have to believe in something, and a faith, especially as we go through this crazy world, just gives you a comfort, gives you purpose. And, you know, since then, I've been active in church ministries, whether it was Sunday school, helping kids, young children. When you're growing up, I have three children, and getting active in all sorts of ministries, men's ministries, music, as you talked about. I'm currently involved in the music ministry, and in my bluegrass band, I always like to play gospel songs because you hear so much of the world is dark. There's no hope in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And where does hope come from? And I think it comes from the faith and knowledge that God created you special. You have an important role to do good in this world. He forgives you, loves you, and it makes it able to tackle the day and help your neighbors. So it's to me, it's a very important part of my life, and I should always be doing more. You know, that's every Sunday you're hearing the message and you're like, wow, yep. And, you know, need to read more, need to be more active and do the best you can and try to, I think you really need to show through others that values are important through your actions. Mm-hmm. And you see in politics, people fall from grace, and then you wonder, you know, were they con men to begin with, you know, when they got in there? Mm-hmm. So faith is important to me, and I think it's really important when you look at our whole government in general. You need to have character and people with principles that have a core set of values.
You know, there seems to be such a rewriting of that very issue in government, top down, all the mm-hmm. way to the federal government, where things that have long been held, I mean, your comment while they go, you have to believe in something. Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of people in government today would argue with you on that, that well, you whatever you believe is okay.
And that's very dangerous. That's very dangerous. If you look at the whole principle, the whole foundation of our country, it's pretty clear in the Declaration of Independence. You know, we are endowed by our creator, capital C. Mm-hmm. Doesn't say we get, you know, King George, which was the power at the time, you know, gives us our right to our lives and our freedom and our property. No, that was not the case. Our country is founded to get away from the king telling us, you know, what we could and could not do. So the whole principle of where God created our freedoms, our life, our freedom, our property are all gifts from God. Mm-hmm. And government is created to stop other people from stealing that from you, or the government stealing it from you without due process, which kind of goes back to the whole court process. You know, there are only two trials where you get 12 members on a jury. That's your capital murder cases and property takings. There's a higher level of evidence needed and conviction needed to take your life or your property away. Mm-hmm. Where do those come from? Comes from our creator. So it made our country unique. It's led to prosperity. Yes, we've made mistakes, you know, as a country. Mm-hmm. But overall, the hope of America, and it's the belief, you know, I know my relatives came over here with nothing and created things, and kids went to college, and the hope and the opportunity, and it's just such a blessing. And it's so unique compared to the rest of the world. It was the leader of freedom. So it's very, when you hear people say, well, character doesn't matter, doesn't matter what they do in their personal life, it's how they run their office. You can't separate the two. You have to have people that have some core philosophy. There's only two people that run for office: those that believe in something and want to do something, and then those that want to be something. And you have to have discernment when people are running. Do they want to be something? Do they want to be important? You know, accolades, the titles, go to the, you know, the Christmas parties mm-hmm. at the law offices. Do they want to be on TV? Do they want to be important? Or do they want to do something? What is it they believe in? What is their motivation for running? And when you look at that, you can really make better decisions when you're voting. And you'll have a better government if you pick people who have core set of values and beliefs, and you know what they stand for and have the courage to stand for it.
Now, that's a big word right there, courage, because when a believer like yourself who loves the Lord and has this very strongly organized set of beliefs, which you obviously have had, and that's what motivated you to go into this anyway, because you're seeing things that they need some value. They need some stewardship by someone who is a believer. And I believe that's a great motivation to get in there and to serve, because you want to do something, as you said, rather than to be something. But at the same time, we're living in days right now where the populace thought is anyone who believes the way you do, Grant, you must just be a little kind of sideways. You must be somehow, something's off, because it's not politically correct to be Grant Malloy right now.
Well, I think ultimately truth outweighs everything. And when you show people why it's important to stand by our founding principles of our country, you can show them where there's more. You don't have to be scared to stand for truth. Where there is more economic freedom, everything is better. The environment's cleaner. Children have higher education levels. Women live longer. There's lower death rates and births. Mm-hmm. There's more civil rights. When you look at countries that have core sets of values and protect your God-given rights of freedom, your life, your freedom, your property, you have the best environment, the best economies, and you can look at this throughout the world. the countries with dictatorships. You know, what type of opportunity you have there? The ones that are based on, if you look at the, you know, the whole Karl Marx thing was removing God from government, mm-hmm. the state becomes the God. That's what happens in North Korea or China. You don't have any rights. You have no rights.
Right.
The dictator tells you what your rights are. And if they don't like you, you're gone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that happens in China. You know, if you're speaking up, you disappear. So, you know, there was a farmer, I remember seeing a picture of this, was protesting the Chinese government coming into the villages and taking the farmland. And they were basically, you can't own the properties, you're squatting in it. And the government sent in and ran him over with a steamroller, just ran him over in the road. We all are familiar with the tank man standing up to those tanks in Tiananmen Square,
yes.
standing for liberty. You know, people don't recognize the value. I heard, I think it was Paul Jehe, I believe was his name, said once, you know, if you're an atheist, you have the most freedom in a Christian country. And that kind of, I thought that through, and I thought, you know, in a country based on biblical values, you're going to give people the right to disagree with you. You're not going to hurt them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can have a discussion. You're going to stand by your beliefs and be able to communicate that. It's the most freedom you have. So, you know, that is really great, even for non-believers,
mm-hmm.
you know. But in a country where there is no value system other than who's in power makes the rules, it's a total different situation. If they don't agree with you, you know, you're gone. And we see that throughout human history. Human history has been brutal. America is a land of opportunity. You know, I remember the old Superman show, you know, able to leap tall buildings, wherever. But then he says, you know, fight for truth, justice, and the American way. And it's a shame you don't really hear that anymore. But that was what America was and should be, and we have to fight for it.
Mm-hmm.
Truth and justice.
And it was treasured, and it was given a value that everyone would fight for, and that's why young men happily ran off to war and oftentimes sadly gave the ultimate mm-hmm. gift that can be given, their own lives, to fight for the freedoms that we now enjoy and are watching so many people just treat them as if it's a cavalier nothing. And it is not nothing. It is a great something that we've had.
We have a great opportunity in this country. So anyhow, I rambled a little bit from your original question about my story with faith, but it is important, I believe.
That it is.
We stand on the rock.
Well, in the words of the great theologian Bob Dylan, you got to serve somebody, and it better to serve the Lord, right? My guest today is Grant Malloy. He is the clerk of the circuit court and comptroller in Seminole County. And we're going to be back with him coming up in a moment. This is Afternoons with Mike right here on The Shepherd.
You've had this feeling that there has to be more to work than just work. You have a job, but what you really long for is a career, one that makes you feel like you're actually making a difference in the world. At Palm Beach Atlantic University, they understand that your career journey is unique. PBA's Orlando campus offers respected programs with personalized instruction from a Christian worldview that empowers you to realize your goals and career opportunities on your terms. Start your new journey today with Palm Beach Atlantic University Orlando at pba.edu. That's pba.edu. Your degree, your way. pba.edu.
In the studio with me is Grant Malloy. Grant is the clerk of the circuit court. And that is such an exciting thing for me to talk to somebody and really, and I would say at the ground floor of government, because when you look at local government, it's so significant. We're seeing now how important it is, because even at state level, you take it up from county to state. Right now, I think any of those governments have become more important during this pandemic than people ever gave it to be, because during the pandemic, we had a lot of local governments issuing decrees and kind of mandates that were never voted upon, never kind of entered into through legislature, but just kind of almost declared. So we see the impact that a local government can have, and even taking it beyond the charter of what the law says it should do.
That's an excellent point. I remember when it first broke out and, you know, people are hoarding the toilet paper and their chaos is breaking out. And some of the things that were going on, I'm watching it. I'm like, personally, mm-hmm. you know, I'm thinking, well, this is kind of crazy, especially when Orange County did the curfew, you mm-hmm. know?
Yeah.
And I'm thinking like, okay, how does, I guess the virus quits at, you know, 5 o'clock or 6 o'clock. And then if you look at the science, you know, one of the biggest spreaders of the virus was close proximity to family members. So in a way it seemed kind of odd, you know, forcing everybody old and young, the folks I knew that got it often got it from family members, mm-hmm. you know, cause you're put back. So it's kind of, you're right. There were a lot of decisions made, very quickly, mm-hmm. unilaterally and without consent of the governed.
And when that happens, I mean, there's no question about it that more has happened than we even know about, without a doubt. But when that happens, then it's like what happens in the legal world where there's a precedent. And now you see that there are people who would, I think, take advantage of the fact that this happened, that so many of us just kind of went along and we gave in. And now we are in a scenario to where it's going to be very interesting to see that just yesterday there was a story that broke about a new, now supposedly bird flu that is supposedly some one case in the world. And it's like a nightmare in the early stages to think about, okay, is what happened in 2020, are we going to be seeing this as a replay, as a rerun in America? We certainly hope not.
I hope not. There always seems to be a crisis around the corner. I remember years ago going to a symposium on the Zika virus. Remember mm-hmm. that? Mm-hmm. And that was going to come up from South Florida. Children were going to have deformed heads, small brains. Yeah. And you don't hear about that anymore. I don't know what happened to it, but that was a big thing.
Yeah.
And taking precautions to keep mosquitoes down and you, Ebola and bird flu and swine flu. Mm-hmm. And it seems like every couple of years there's another.
Well, I tell you, it's important to have people in the government that really do carry with them into the government the values and the beliefs that I believe you carry. And I guess going back to what we were talking about in segment one, the level of courage that I know you have to deal with, because you have to stand up, you're not going to be a person that's going to see this going on and see someone present something that is just not only morally right, wrong, it's not right, but it's bad policy on top of that, without then saying something, because you're going to lead a lot of times with your conscience and with your feelings. So you have to have the courage to do that in a public setting.
Right, right. The clerk's office is a little bit different in that we don't set policy. You know, we are doing our job often behind the scenes. So as a clerk, I'm not out in the forefront like a governor would be,
mm-hmm,
who's setting policy. But it's still important, though, to have people that have, you know, character, because like when you look at a clerk's office, it's really an office that has enormous, I think the term would be public trust. People have to have confidence that the clerk's office is being above board, transparent, because we have the checkbook and savings account to the county commission. So we have hundreds of millions of dollars under our control. We're the access to the justice system. People depend on us for a lot of different issues as they mm-hmm. come into. We're the neutral party in the courtroom. We keep track of both sides. We don't take sides, but we make sure everything that happened is accounted for accurately. You know, we have to collect fines and fees, deal with people in difficult situations, mental health issues, Baker Acts, Marchman Acts with drug addiction. We work with child support cases. We collect money for that. There are just dozens of real estate transactions. People have to have confidence in the clerk's office,
mm-hmm.
in whatever county you're in. The clerk and the comptroller have a very important role, and you want to make sure that the money's accounted for, the information's accurate, and that everybody has equal access to the court system.
Mm-hmm. You've been in now for how long?
Going on 5 years now.
Wow. The 4-year term?
Yes, it is.
So you're elected every 4 years, and is that on the same as the presidential cycle?
It is. It is.
Mm-hmm.
It just came up last November.
Mm-hmm. So you've gone through already your first reelection campaign, and you did it successfully?
Yep. I think people know my reputation of one of fairness and accountability. I was happy that we got more. I got more votes than Trump or Biden in Seminole County, so that was kind of nice. You know, one of the things to point out is that this is an independent office, so I answer directly to the voters.
Mm-hmm.
So when they're voting, the voters are my boss, and I take that very seriously.
Mm-hmm. So basically, it's a nonpartisan kind of a situation.
No, it's actually partisan.
Oh, it is still partisan.
Yep, I'm a Republican. There was not a primary this go around, so there was just myself and a Democrat candidate.
Mm-hmm. Do you like that whole thing of campaigning?
You know, campaigning is a mixed bag. I love talking to people. I love hearing their ideas. I love connecting. I love the story with Mr. Wheeler. I love, you know, you meet so many great people, and you get to be part of the community. That part is great. Raising money, I hate to do that. I love to knock on doors. I've knocked on thousands and thousands of doors all throughout Seminole County. But it takes a lot of time. Mm-hmm. You know, it's basically a whole nother part-time job. So it's an endeavor. But overall, I like it. I don't think you could be in this job if you didn't like the campaign. So overall, I like it. But it's a challenge. It's a lot of work.
What are the term limits for your role?
There's no term limits in Seminole County.
Mm-hmm. So you could do this. Do you have a heart to do this for a long time?
I know I'd run one more time for sure. Mm-hmm. We're doing a lot of, I hope I have an opportunity to talk about some of the changes. We've made so many improvements here. You know, I'm a business owner, so I approach this whole totally different. And I want to be the office where Chick-fil-A comes to us to find out how does the Seminole County Clerk's Office do things. We want to be like them. So I've got this real entrepreneur spirit in there where we're doing things that are really revolutionizing even the whole state as far as our technology improvements. It has the potential to. We're doing some really cool things.
Can you elaborate on
that? Oh, sure. Yeah. Like one of the things we're coming out with is a new technology. It's an electronic certification. And for instance, if you want to get a certified document, you normally would go to the clerk's office and we would either stamp it or put the red seal on it and sign it. And what that does is it verifies that this is a copy of the original document. So you can take that in different legal processes. You can present it and say, this is guaranteed to be the right document. And that can be on, you know, court documents, official records, that sort of thing. But with this whole, everything's going electronic now. So we've developed a system with the PDF that's locked. It has a security code on it, and it has a QR code as well as a URL that we can send this to you electronically anywhere in the world. You'll get a certified copy. It has a replica of the certification on it, plus security features. And then you can take the document, and you can go back to our database and verify that it's the original document. So it's not like somebody could get a certified copy, you know, make a replicate of it and change numbers or names in it. This is locked down solid. And we've developed this. We've offered to share it with other clerk's offices in the state. So that's something we're in the talks with. Some counties have developed it as well. And there's another company that's done it. But I would say the one we've developed is by far the most advanced technology. Very easy to use, and you could plug this into other clerks' offices. And it's the emerging technology where the society's going. We're also talking with other clerks' offices about creating a statewide foundation for what they call it a case maintenance system, where all your court documents are stored. We get, in Seminole County, 3 million pages of court documents each year. So it's a huge amount of volume coming in. It's got to be secure. And we have some ideas on how to make the technology less expensive and improve it for clerks' offices throughout the state. And that's something I'm talking with other clerks right now. Online marriage licenses, we're one of the first in the state to do it. When COVID broke out and a lot of places were shut down, you could log in, you could create an appointment, fill out your marriage license online, have a video conference, sign in a document electronically, and get your marriage license sent to you right over through an email. And that was really helpful during COVID when a lot of people were afraid to travel. So we're always looking at ways, how can we make this more information online? we just opened a self-help center at the Civil Courthouse in downtown Sanford, trying to, for people that can't afford attorneys or confused by the whole process, if it comes to evictions or small claims or dissolution of marriage, you could come right into our self-help center and get the proper forms to you. We can't give you legal advice, but we can give you the forms. There is a way you can file it right with us paperlessly. You can even do that online now. We have something called a Turbo Court platform at similclerk.org. And if you want to file those and even injunctions, you can go through and it's an intuitive form you can fill out. And it'll ask you questions. It'll fill out the form for you. I think it's like 10 or 11 bucks for the company. And then you submit that directly to us.
Mm-hmm.
Always looking at ways to help people out and get information easier and to access the courts and have their day in court easier.
Mm. Yeah, there's so many things that technology, when it's working right, it's wonderful. We've seen some times in America where technology has not worked, let's just say, in the right direction with a couple of, like the oil pipeline, when people are coming in and hacking that line and putting basically ransomware down. How is it? And I've heard of other communities, other cities and their municipalities where they were hit with ransomware. How hard is it? Or do you find it in this environment right now to avoid that?
You know, when you're dealing with government is not normally a good, how would you say? It's not ahead of the curve.
Mm-hmm.
You know, electronic crime is going through the roof. I was at a police chief meeting the other day. They said attacks on businesses since COVID gone up 200%.
Wow.
I mean, it is exploding and security is very important. We take that very seriously. We have a dedicated security person in our technology team. We get audited. We have all these systems set up to that you cannot connect to our secure system. I don't know why the pipeline was on the internet.
Yeah,
you know,
so crazy.
When that happened, our IT guys are going, well, hey, why'd that happen? But when you look at government, I mean, government is, it's not the place you go to for innovation normally. You know, I'm trying to be different, but Broward County Schools got hacked, $40 million ransomware.
Mm-hmm.
Baltimore, total disaster. I mean, so it's a huge issue and we take it very seriously and are always trying to stay with the latest technology, with the best firewalls. And I'm not an IT guy, so I can't delve into, you know, specifically how it works, but I know ours is an extremely secure system and it has to be.
Mm-hmm.
And government has to stay on top of that.
And I think every person in your role, whether or not they're an IT type person, they've got to be really concerned about this.
One of the things we do, I get them all the time. We have fake emails that go out mm-hmm. to all of our employees. And I have a class coming up where we have technology security for all the employees. But we try to trick the employees. They try to trick me. Like I got an email this morning and I'm looking at it and I'm like, okay, now this is not right. It was because one thing you always got to look for, you know, they can make it look like it's coming from a legitimate source, like a bank, you know, it's the same symbols, but there's always a rush to it, right? Like check this information now to, you know, whatever the issue is to see if you won the prize. There's a free Apple, you know, watch coming out. You need to check now. And if you don't think about it and you click on that hyperlink, it can take you to malware very easily. You always need to stop before you respond to any email and really look at it. And if we have an employee that accidentally clicks on it, then they get called in for additional training.
Is that right?
Yeah. Because we take it extremely serious and there's two ways, you know, it's the email coming to you where you can open it up into your system or an employee bringing a thumb drive. You know, those are typically how you can get a lot of corruption. Some companies will hire, you know, they'll leave a thumb. Some hackers will leave a thumb drive in a parking lot. So you might pick it up and think, oh, I wonder who this is. You stick it in your computer to see what it was. And now you're hacked.
You're hacked.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it can be pretty serious, your hacking, because it can be devastating to the things you've got in your computer. If you're one who maybe your controls over your finances aren't all that secure,
mm-hmm.
then they've got a gateway right into that. That's crazy.
One thing I would point out is that if you are a victim of a fraud like that, you need to contact law enforcement super quick. If you accidentally transferred money, somewhere by hoax. If you can get the police involved quicker, there's always a chance through law enforcement they can stop the transactions, because mm-hmm. a lot of this money is going to Mexico. It's going, you know, South America, Russia. There's a lot of foreign influences in there, and there are agreements with some of these banking consortiums that if the government finds out quick enough, they might be able to stop a transaction from actually going through. Mm-hmm. And holidays are a big time where this occurs, because they catch people off guard at home, and more of the law enforcement's not paying attention. You know, if you're on a break for the long weekend,
it can happen so yeah. fast, and people give away information without thinking, because it feels so legitimate. What they mm-hmm. say can come over, but you're right. You got to avoid those moments where it says, do it now. You need to do this immediately.
One of our ladies at church got frauded, and it came through Facebook, you know, a fake profile of somebody she thought she knew that was in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
It comes all sorts of different ways.
Mm-hmm. My guest today, Grant Malloy, and he is the clerk of the circuit court and comptroller at Seminole County. We're going to be back with him in a moment for one more segment. Don't go away. This is Afternoons with Mike here on The Shepherd.
Are you looking to make a fresh career start? As Florida's top Christian college, Palm Beach Atlantic University Orlando knows your faith is important to you, and it should be to your school as well. PBA Orlando offers a faith-based experience unlike any other. Whether it's a degree in leadership ministry or counseling, PBA combines biblical concepts from exceptional professors who bring years of real-world experience as leaders in their fields. Call them today at 844-PBA-ORLANDO. That's 844-PBA-ORLANDO. Education for your soul as well as your mind.
Back for our last segment here with Grant Malloy, a very interesting individual, a believer, a strong believer, who really wanted to make a difference and to add the values that he has incorporated into his life, which really comes from God. And we would believe that many of the founding fathers also, in a very similar way, wanted to acknowledge God in all things civics. And, you know, to this day, Grant, we look at our dollars and our coins, and it's stamped on there, in God we trust. And yet that's got to be, to this day, that's got to be something that grates on a lot of the progressives that are in office right now. And I'm sure there are efforts more than we could ever imagine to have that struck.
Oh, always is. And you have to remember that our country is founded on the freedom of religion, not from it. And, you know, the values were throughout, you know, men. Yes, people made mistakes,
mm-hmm.
but that core value of our Creator has blessed us with our lives, our freedom, our property is huge. It's a huge help to make people happier, more prosperous, a brighter future. And you can look just throughout human history. It's always better when there's more freedom, which brings about responsibility mm-hmm. as well. You know, freedom, opportunity to be rewarded for hard work, protecting your life from being taken away from others or from the government itself. Huge, huge benefits to society.
No question about it. Now, before we finish talking about some of the things with the clerk's office in Seminole County, you're a banjo picker. How did you come across that instrument?
Well, it was funny. Back in the 70s or 80s, I guess, when that, remember the old Take It Easy by the Eagles?
Oh, yeah. Oh, I love it.
And at the end, they had that banjo in it.
Yeah.
And I thought, man, that sounds really cool.
Yeah.
And then here and there, now and then, I'd hear a banjo in a song, and I just loved it. So I told my parents. My parents were always really good at, you know, helping with like tennis lessons or tutors. They always wanted you to succeed. And I remember talking to my mom and dad, and they got me a banjo for a rental for just to try it out. And we went down to the the music store down by the Orlando Sentinel on Orange Avenue. I forget the name of it.
Yeah,
it's
I'm
no
not
longer
sure.
there. Anyhow, I took some lessons and liked it, and so they ended up buying me one, and it just kind of took off from there. And I play a little guitar and a little bass too. I love playing music, and our band is called Late for Dinner. We haven't played much, but we always like to play some gospel songs in there, because you know, you listen to gospel songs, and they're happy.
Yeah,
you know, they're
yeah.
happy.
Toe tapping.
Yeah, yeah. You listen to some of the stuff I hear. Some like. My kids listen to them like that. Is that music? You know, mm-hmm. I don't even think it's music, but you know, you hear a song and you know, How Great Thou Art, and they have stories to them. You know, Keep on the Sunny Side was about a child in a wheelchair wanted to be on the sunnier side of the street, you know, mm-hmm. when his parents took him for out of the house, and so many songs about just hope in times of tough times. And I just love it.
Would you play finger style or strum style?
I can do both. I mainly play the Earl Scruggs three uh-huh. finger style. Right, and I actually took some lessons from Tony Trischka once. Super amazing. I need to get better. But I also started doing the Franling, kind of the Grandpa Jones mm-hmm. the strumming. Yeah. I don't do it as regularly because to me it's a little limiting. You normally stay down the neck on that, whereas with the Scruggs style, you get some tricks, you can go up the neck, and mm-hmm. to me it's a little more exciting.
So yours is a five-string banjo
yep,
then.
Five-string. Yeah. I got a couple different ones, and I even got a banjola, which is
half guitar.
It's like half guitar, half banjo, and it has mm-hmm. a real mellow sound, so mm-hmm. it's good for playing jazzier things.
But it has six strings on it, so...
No.
Oh, this one's not.
This has five. Yeah, there's a great a music store over in Cocoa Beach, but not Cocoa, it's over in Titusville, Gold Tone.
Okay.
And they have some of the craziest instruments over there, an 11-string banjo. They've got this is half mandolin, half banjo, reverse it, banjo ukuleles. They got banjo basses. That's crazy looking. They have all these different weird hybrids of instruments. And my friend got a mandolin that's a six-string mandolin tuned like a guitar.
Isn't that something?
Crazy stuff over there.
Yeah. I play mandolin just a little bit, and it's so different. The tuning is backwards to a lot of the things that we would do on guitar. So you have to get that in mind, but it's so much fun to get to do music like that and to play banjo. I mean, I had a friend give me a banjo one time, and I learned to play it for a recording that I mm-hmm. did. It was used to make jingles for radio stations, and so... That's what we did. I played it in the studio. I learned one song on the banjo to be able to play that in the studio, and that's the only time I think I've played banjo since. It's been a long time. But guitar, oh my goodness, that's a different story, and we'll have to jam.
We got to jam. We'll get together.
Got to do that, my man.
Yeah.
Let's go back real quick before our show ends here and go back to your work at Seminole County. I know we were talking about one of the most important things that people who may never have interacted with the clerk before, but when they want to get married, that's when they're going to have their first interaction with your office. And you talked about how many things, but that's an example, isn't it, of everyday use.
Right. That's one of the many, many services we provide. And if you go to SeminoleClerk.org or our phone number is 407-665-4300, but if you go to our webpage, there's an icon on there for marriage licenses. You can fill one out online mm-hmm. and submit it to us. You can either make an appointment to do it online, or you can come into either branch or either courthouse and finish the transaction. And it's good for, I think it's 60 days. And there's a discount if you take the marriage license course. You get about $23 off. So instead of it being $87, it's in the $60 range. Mm-hmm. And we also do weddings at the branches or the civil courthouse. We have one of the prettiest wedding chapels up there at the civil courthouse. It's really pretty. It's right across from the lake as well. A lot of couples in there all the time getting married and getting photos made over at mm-hmm. the marina across the street. It's become quite popular. We'll even do photos. You know, I talk about service, like thinking differently. Started offering wedding photos and even a frameable certificate for an extra $25. So trying to make the experience valuable. So that's been a great service. We do passport service as well at our record center. Jury duty is huge. We summon about 30,000 people a year to for trials and bring them in and process them, turn them over to the judges. We've modernized things where it's a laser. If you register online, you just walk into jury duty, just scan a laser code, and you're checked in. Always trying to look at ways to make it mm-hmm. easier for people.
That's really a great service. And thinking, going back to passports, mm-hmm. everyone's hearing today about vaccine passports, and it's bringing up the question, what are you thinking from your office standpoint, the impact of COVID is going to have on passports in the future?
Well, I know for certain when COVID came out, they dropped to nothing, right? Because even the State Department, which
couldn't travel.
Yeah, State Department even stopped processing them. There's still a long delay right now, but I looked at the numbers yesterday and they're back up to normal. People are getting back to normal. We do about 450 passports a month over there. And the numbers were back up to normal when I looked yesterday. So I think folks are kind of tired of the lockdown and are, you know, wanting to be cautious, but get back on with life. And it's, I tell you, it's really needed. You know, you look at the problems with the economy, you know, what happened, it's unprecedented. Some of the things that have happened to our country and the world economy.
Now, are you still seeing any area of your, what would be your bread and butter work that you do 5 days a week, every week, that are still being restricted heavily because of COVID?
No, the everything's pretty much back to normal. And we never completely shut down. You know, we're an essential service. You know, people had to, you know, get certain access to courts. And we kept our record center open the whole time. Contractors needed to file notice of commencements. We stayed open, and we had contractors that did business, whether roofers, people doing fences, that type of thing, construction. They came to Seminole County because they could get a notice of commencement filed with the clerk's office, whereas other counties were not doing that for a while. And so, you know, we stayed open to help people with that. The biggest problem we had was when COVID came, our revenues just dropped. Unbelievable. We got a 40% budget cut in the last quarter. It was unprecedented.
Now, that's a huge budget.
Huge.
Cut.
Our budgets are smaller now than they were 15 years ago, with fewer people and more to do. It's a crazy funding formula. A lot. I won't go into details because it gets really crazy. But we're mainly funded with fees. We don't get tax money on courts. There's no tax money. So we get you know, a certain portion of a traffic ticket. And we went in Seminole County from 200 traffic tickets a day to... One day we had six. In the entire day. And I looked at that and I just panicked and I thought, this is bad. So it's been a huge problem, and I won't bore you to death on that. But what clerks are asked, if you had the federal government or state government operate like clerk's offices, it would probably be half the size as it is today.
Mm-hmm.
It would be substantially smaller.
And so would our debt.
Our debt, we wouldn't have debt.
Yeah.
If government operated like clerk's offices throughout the state of Florida, it would be a totally different story. We have to do so much with less. We have, just an example, in 2005, the budget peaked in courts in Seminole County at $8.6 million. There were 231 employees in the clerk's office. If you factored inflation to that, it would be about $11.4 million. Today we're operating on the court side at 8.1 million
mm-hmm.
with, there's 195 employees total. So there's fewer on the court side. So we're operating on, you know, was that 20% fewer employees and a substantially smaller budget
mm-hmm.
and doing more, 3 million pages a year, 4,500 passports, you know, Marchman Acts, Baker Acts, the amount of work we're doing for the constraints we have is very difficult.
Mm. Yeah. Give us the website for people to check out all of your services.
SeminoleClerk.org. And we've recently upgraded the website as well. You can find documents on there, forms. You can search in different languages. It's ADA compliant, trying to stay on top of all the latest technology. I think you probably will find Seminole County Clerk's Office, I hear this all the time. One of the easiest to work with, from the friendliest people. We got
mm-hmm.
great staff, dedicated people who really care about the community that you know, want to help and serve. So I think you'll find great experience. And you don't have to live in Seminole to get a marriage license from us either. You could live anywhere in the listening area. You can get a passport or a marriage license from us. You don't have to live in Seminole County.
I would bet most people did not realize mm-hmm. that.
In fact, a lot of attorneys will even file cases in Seminole. A lot of attorneys will file dissolution of marriage. We had some from South Florida or Tampa file in Seminole County because they know that we'll turn it around within usually a couple hours in our office. We'll docket it. It'll go to the judge electronically. And if it's uncontested and all negotiated, a judge will sign right from their desk. You don't even have to come to the courthouse.
Mm.
So trying to make it easier.
So if they can't see you at the Seminole County Clerk's Office, they might catch you playing some banjo out or at your church on a Sunday morning playing bass guitar.
That's right. First Christian of Winter Park. I'll be playing this Sunday, playing bass over there.
Oh, that's wonderful. And no, folks, you can't go up to him during the children's ministry break and get a marriage license. Doesn't work that way. Give us your website one more time, my friend.
Sure. SeminoleClerk.org.
SeminoleClerk.org.
Right.
Grant Malloy, my guest today. I can't tell you how much fun this has been, my friend. And thank you for coming by and being a part of our show here on The Shepherd.
Thank you, Mike. My pleasure, and thanks for inviting me.
It's great to have you. And friends, thanks for joining us for yet another show. We'll catch you next time right here on Afternoons with Mike.
Afternoons with Mike, brought to you by Palm Beach Atlantic University, Orlando.